The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator...
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, April 14th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and it's time to file your taxes. Oh my God, tax day is tomorrow. We got to get that turned in here too. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here. We're coming to you live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. Also joining us here on the show is our co-host and engineer, Ganja John.
What's up, bro?
You're in the hoodie.
Yeah, I'm hiding today. I don't feel so good.
Okay, we'll switch.
And I forgot to wear a hat too. So.
We'll switch the cam back over here. Yeah. Kaliko, the intern's in house as well. Hi, Kaliko. How you doing today?
Doing quite well, thank you, Russ.
All right, you're looking mighty dapper.
Oh, thank you. Preparing myself for the conference.
It's gonna be some fun. Of course. And Kaliko, if you're here in the local Portland area, Kaliko is turning out to be a frequent call-in guest on the Lars Larson Show.
You know, trying to make a guest appearance every once in a while.
Ah, we love it. That's another type of activism, man. Getting your voice out there, calling in these talk radio shows, calling in these, writing your letters to the editor of these newspapers, and letting him know how you feel. Because there's so many people out there that agree with you, they're just afraid to stand up and be counted. So you make that step, and other people will follow you. Unfortunately, we don't get to visit with Cannabis Carrie today in Grastoria, Oregon. She is still recovering from her birthday yesterday. We forgot her birthday. I forgot her birthday.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was telling you before the show, it's her fault for not having a Facebook profile to tell
it's,
me.
It's the Facebook thing, right? Yeah. You gotta stay in touch. So happy birthday. Happy belated birthday to Cannabis Carrie. Yeah. So I'll be handling the news today. In the news today, some great stuff. Arizona's medical marijuana program goes online today. The Florida Supreme Court comes back with a surprising decision on dog sniffing. The San Diego City Council comes up with new zoning regulations for dispensaries. A mother in Alabama is going to lose her freedom and her infant due to her infant testing positive for marijuana. And a sad story. It's not a stupid stoner story. It's a sad stoner story for an Oregonian caught in Utah. Also on today's show, we have got the John Doe radio program bringing us our Groovin' Thursday tune, Tatanka with My Permission, a little bit of hip-hop coming at you. And then at half past, cops say legalized drugs. Sean Dunnigan, a former DEA intelligence officer, joins us, and a little bit of rant at the end. See you in a minute.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Strupp. And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual National Conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Strupp. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Cannabis Carry has the day off today. I'm Radical Russ with your Normal News. Reporting from the Arizona Capital Times and Associated Press, Arizona's medical marijuana program opens, and it's the first online-only registration in the nation. Arizona's medical marijuana program is hitting a milestone Thursday today as patients start turning in applications for the drug to help treat cancer and other diseases in what officials believe is the only completely electronic application system in the country. Since the application for a medical marijuana card is electronic, anyone hoping to apply in person or by phone with the Arizona Department of Health Services will be turned away. And if there are any kinks in the online system, they also will need to report the problem online. Patients first will have to do about a half hour of data entry with things like their age, address, and medical condition. Then they'll have to attach documents to their applications that include a photograph of themselves, a photo ID, and a signed doctor's attestation that the patient needs medical marijuana and will not give or sell it to anyone. Well, interesting here that it's an online application system, but it's kind of troubling that it's online only. You're talking about people here that are disabled, and you're asking them to do a half hour of data entry. Many of the people that need medical marijuana have nothing to do with computers, much less having the skill or ability to be able to handle a half hour of data entry. We're talking about, let's see, they need to include a photograph of themselves. Okay, we need digital photography, the ability to hook it up to a machine, download the photo, convert it, get it to, and there's probably a limit to the size of the photo too, so it'll have to be either cropped or reduced, and that involves some image editing software. They need a photo ID of themselves and the doctor's attestation. That has to be submitted online, so we're talking about getting a piece of paper converted to PDF and attaching that to some sort of application process. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that those of us in the digital world kind of take for granted, but there's a whole lot of people out there that need medical marijuana for whom this is going to be an impossible set of hoops to jump through. And what's going to happen here is it's going to set up a new entrepreneurial opportunity for some computer savvy young people to, whatever age, but some computer savvy people to help these people with their application process and, of course, charge them a fee for that. So that's a little troubling that the only way we're going to give them access is online. I do like that they are focusing on an online system and making that available. Certainly, it reduces paperwork and the overhead costs of the program, but it can't be the only way that we allow people to get medical marijuana in the state of Arizona. A story coming out of the Herald Tribune in Florida, and this is very shocking. I was surprised to see this and that this is the first I'd heard of it. Police dog sniff test on homes, illegal. Florida's police cannot use a drug dog outside of a suspected marijuana grow house because it violates a constitutional right to privacy within the home, the Florida Supreme Court ruled today. That's amazing to hear that. Wow. The opinion is worth a read, even for those not usually interested in appeals court rulings, because both sides of the 5-2 opinion passionately write for their side on a critical issue of what it means to live in America. For those with less time, here's the highlights. And the case is Jardines versus State of Florida. The majority wrote that when there is nothing but an anonymous tip about a house being used to cultivate marijuana, the use of a dog equals searching inside the home. Drug dogs can be used after a warrant has been obtained using other information, they stated. The justices are worried about the ramifications, and this is from the majority opinion. Quote, further, if government agents can conduct a dog sniff test at a private residence without any prior evidentiary showing of wrongdoing, there is nothing to prevent the agents from applying the procedure in an arbitrary or discriminatory manner or based on whim and fancy at the home of any citizen. Such an open-ended policy invites overbearing and harassing conduct. And in a special opinion agreeing with this, Justice Lewis from the Florida Supreme Court wrote, quote, the scent of items cooking on a stove, the whiff of an air freshener, or even the foul smell associated with a ruptured sewage line are all intimate details of a home that are expected to remain private and unavailable to the public. We, as Americans, have an unwavering expectation that there will not be someone or something sniffing into every crack, crevice, window, or chimney of our homes. We especially do not expect strangers to bring dogs onto or into our private front porches to sniff under our front doors or any of the cracks or crevices of our homes. We cannot permit the protections of the Fourth Amendment, fragile as they may be, to be decimated piece by piece and little by little until they become mere vestiges of our past. Wow, this is an amazing ruling, 5-2 majority ruling in Florida. But the two justices who ruled, deferred from that opinion, said there is no expectation of privacy when it comes to drugs. And they say, quote, as held by the United States Supreme Court, a dog sniff is not a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment because it only reveals contraband, and there is no legitimate expectation of privacy in contraband that society is willing to recognize as reasonable. Given this binding precedent, Frankie's sniff, well, the dog sniff, while lawfully present at the Jardine's front door, cannot be considered a search under the Fourth Amendment. And this reveals something that I believe it was Scalia on the United States Supreme Court has referred to, which is that the Fourth Amendment only applies to people's privacy with respect to legal things, right? Your privacy with respect to illegal things, he says there is no such thing in the Fourth Amendment, and that's not a reasonable, you know, protection from reasonable search and seizure. Scalia's view here is that the Fourth Amendment doesn't protect the privacy of criminals, and that therefore if you're growing pot, you're a criminal, and the dog being there at your front door legally and sniffing you doing something criminal, you don't have any privacy expectations for criminal behavior. And that's a very, very dangerous precedent the United States Supreme Court has held. I am so glad to see the Florida Supreme Court has seen it the right way in preserving freedom and liberty in this country. We have more zoning news from the state of California. The San Diego City Council gave final approval to some sweeping zoning and public safety regulations for medical marijuana dispensaries. This is from NBC San Diego. But Tuesday night's vote wasn't without controversy. A handful of people against the measure staged a protest in council chambers. A few of them were detained and escorted out. Minutes later, council members returned and voted 5-2, just like the Supreme Court in Florida, 5-2 ratifying the new restrictions confining dispensaries to light industrial and commercial areas of the city, restricting where these can be. Now, are we restricting the pharmacies, the Walgreens, the CVSs to light industrial and commercial? Yeah, well, we'll have to see. Council members Lori Zapf and David Alvarez oppose the members, according to the San Diego Union Tribune. Zapf says they don't go far enough, and Alvarez said they went too far. So really, we only have one guy who was against zoning these dispensaries out of existence. The ordinance will essentially require dozens of medical marijuana dispensaries to close within a month and apply for operating permits. Critics fear far fewer dispensaries will eventually reopen under the new rules due to the tougher standards to obtain a permit. Dispensaries will not be able to sell cannabis within 600 feet of places of worship, parks, schools, and other sensitive locations. I always wonder why this is the case. What is it about a medical marijuana dispensary, people getting their medicine, that is so offensive and frightening to be near a church or a park or a school? Any ideas?
I have no idea. I thought there was kind of a separation of church and state. Why would we make rules around a church?
Yeah, to give churches special protection. Very interesting about that, too. And you know, it's like they want to treat them as if they're strip clubs, right? Or bars or something, right? When we're talking about
a brothel.
like it's a brothel or something. It needs to be in a red light district here. So, yeah, that's more restrictions in San Diego from these new pot measures. Again, let's come up with reasonable regulations. Anything that a Walgreens would have to apply for, I think, is where we should set the line for dispensaries. Sad story coming out of Alabama, and we've reported this theme many times from states in the South. In terms of comments, this is one of the most popular topics I've got, is a post called Mom Booked and Baby Born with Marijuana in Her System. Got 130 comments. I had another post called Alabama Mother Arrested When Newborn Tests Positive for Marijuana Metabolites. Well, we have another one of these stories where an Alabama newborn tests positive for marijuana and the mom faces a possible 10-year prison sentence. From Alabama13.com, Florence, Alabama. A Florence police say a woman was arrested after a newborn baby tested positive for having marijuana in her system. Police say 35-year-old Jennifer Lynn Sopanos of Florence is charged with chemical endangerment of a child. Sopanos' baby boy was born March 16th at Eliza Coffey Memorial Hospital. Police say he tested positive for THC, the main active chemical in marijuana. Police Detective Keith Johnson said Sopanos also tested positive for THC. Now, according to the hospital, I looked further through this and got another story. According to the hospital, it's not commonplace to drug test these infants when they're born. This is from WAFF. A spokesperson at ECM Hospital in Florence would not comment on what triggered the test of Sopanos' baby, citing HIPAA laws, but did say it is not standard procedure to test for drugs in a newborn system. There are several different parameters that doctors and medical staff look into before deciding whether or not to test a newborn. Officials said the two biggest factors are medical history of the mother or possible concerns a doctor might have. Or, I don't know, maybe an intake address listing a low-income apartment, a Grateful Dead sticker on her VW van. She's wearing a tie-dye sundress. Maybe she's naming the newborn Starshine or something. I'm sure they've got quite the comprehensive and fair set of standards for deciding, you know, just which infants we're going to test for drugs. But, you know, really, it's not really a bad idea to make sure the infants are protected from a mother's use of, you know, drugs. Meth, coke, opiates. Hell, even alcohol and tobacco are shown to have deleterious effects to the fetus. But, you know, I can't recall any chemical endangerment of a child prosecution for mother's tobacco use, now that I think about it. However, it makes no sense to prosecute for a mother's use of cannabis. Expectant mothers have been using cannabis for over 5,000 years to deal with morning sickness and pain and all sorts of things. And if there was any serious effects from it, we'd know by now. Melanie Dreyer's work in the 70s studying cannabis-only smoking Rastafarian moms in Jamaica found no detriment in the children of cannabis-using moms, and there's other studies to back it up. Paula Mantano's got a great piece on it out at normal.org. We've got a link to it at our blog at stash.normal.org. But there's also some studies now, to be fair, that conclude heavy maternal use in the first and second trimester can affect the later verbal and memory skills in children. We're talking heavy, heavy use. So, all right, let's pretend that 5,000 years of maternal use hasn't taught us anything and that smoking could be harmful to the fetus. And we already know maternal use of other drugs is very harmful. So at least now we catch this mom, you know, her drug use, whatever it is, can be addressed in a rehab and she can become a fine mother of her newborn, right? Wrong. We go to timesdaily.com. Jennifer Lynn Sopanos, age 35, is charged with chemical endangerment of a child, authorities said. The charge is a Class C felony and is punishable by a prison sentence of 1 to 10 years if convicted. Well, I'm sure being raised by some foster family for 1 to 10 years while mom sits in a cell won't be as harmful to the child as mom toking some weed to beat back morning sickness. All right, one quick story, and it's not a stupid stoner story. It's a sad stoner story coming out of St. George, Utah. This is from thespectrum.com. An Oregon man was arrested Wednesday morning after the Transportation Security Administration allegedly discovered marijuana in his bag at the St. George Municipal Airport. St. George Police Spokes Officer Johnny Hepler said the police were called to the airport at 9:30 on a drug call. Courtney Selly, on his way home to Oregon, was going through the TSA checkpoint when they allegedly discovered a pocket knife. The bag was searched and the marijuana contained in a prescription bottle was located. Hepler said he has a prescription through the Veterans Affairs Office. Police contacted VA, and they say they don't give out prescriptions like that. And he's probably an Oregon medical marijuana patient. He doesn't, you know exactly how to express himself here. And it's just sad, you know, because it's probably an accident. You know, he's got this pocket knife, and he doesn't think, and he leaves it in his bag. And boy, you go through TSA. I got this just the other day when I was going to Missouri. I left my Leatherman tool. I got a Leatherman tool with the pliers and the pocket knife. I left that in my bag as I was going through security. I had to pay $15 at the TSA gate to mail it back home to myself. So I understand how that mistake can be made, and it's just sad that the mistake had to be made in Utah, where he's going to, you know, suffer for this, instead of back in Oregon, where he could be free to go on his way.
I think it's time for a break.
It's definitely time for a break, so we will have one, and we'll be right back with some Groovin' Thursday music from JohnDoeRadio.com.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
West Vienna, Malgo, broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to broke down barrier. Boost the economy and broke down barrier. It's helping other states, broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice, broke down barrier. We gonna change the law, broke down barrier. We got to educate, broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a nonprofit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
This is Normal Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and JohnDoeRadio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio. My God, it's fun.
John Doe.
JDR here with your Groovin' Thursday on Normal Show Live. Today I'm bringing you one of my favorite local bands named Tatanka. If you've received a Silver Surfer vaporizer for free from the John Doe Radio Show, then this band's manager is who sent it to you. good buddy. Thank you very much for helping out everybody with those Silver Surfer giveaways. Homegrown in Denver, Colorado, Tatanka is a three-piece specializing in the sounds of dub, progressive reggae, and electro. As you can hear, it's pretty bomb. Heavy drum and bass grooves provide the pulse for the party as the music invites you to get down and dirty. These Denver players have shared the stage with many a major national act and continue to push their sound to the next level. Keep an ear out for Tatanka as they make their way to a speaker near you. That coming from their MySpace page. If you would like to visit MySpace, it's a little bit different than probably the last time you remember it. A few more bands, a little bit cooler. Just a little bit cooler. All right, this is Tatanka. Song is called My Permission. Thank you for giving me permission to join you on Normal Show Live. Rush, you rock. Ganja John, you rock. Feel Better. Cannabis Carrie, you rock too. How's it going? It's John Doe. Until we meet again, getting myself into trouble. See ya.
His mother called me, looked at me, and he said, I'm down and out, and I need a bit of money. Won't you put it in my hand? My blood runs fire. I feel it inside. I beg the question.
My mission.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
U.S. V.I. Namal go broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to broke down barrier. Boost the economy and broke down barrier. It's helping other states broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice broke down barrier. We gonna change the law broke down barrier. We got to educate broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up U.S. V.I. Namal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From Friend's Closet Grow Room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
All right, everyone, welcome back. And we're joined today by a former DEA Senior Intelligence Research Specialist, Sean Dunnigan, with LEAP from Washington, D.C. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, so glad to have you here. Let's give folks a little bit of your background. I'm looking at your bio here from LEAP, and it looks like you were working with the USDEA for over a decade. Tell folks what you were involved with.
Yeah, it was about 13 years altogether, just supporting drug investigation that started off in Miami, went to Guatemala for a few years, and most recently 2 years in Mexico.
Mm. And of those most recent years, those years in Mexico, you know, we've been doing a lot of stories about the violence that's happening down there. Tell us your experiences and how this has come to shape your view that we need to just outright legalize.
Yeah, wow. You know, the experience being there for a couple of years, you really see the impact that our policies have. It's incredible to see just the dissolution of the judicial system, the law enforcement infrastructure, and so the business community, and just Mexican society as a whole. It's just had such a terrible impact on the whole country. Mexico spends about $10 billion a year on law enforcement. Of course, most of that is on drug law enforcement. So seeing, you know, more and more resources thrown at it with fewer and fewer results really definitely had an impact in bringing me to this point.
And tell us about the corruption down there. I mean, we hear so much about plata y plomo, you know, the silver or the lead. They take the bribe or they take the bullet. And how hard that is from a law enforcement perspective when you're working down there. I imagine you have to coordinate with a lot of these agencies, and you may not know the allegiance of who you're coordinating with. What was that like for you?
Sure, absolutely. You know, overseas, everything we do was coordinated and needs to be coordinated with host nation counterparts. The problem there is corruption is just at the municipal and state levels is really terribly rampant and existent at the federal level, certainly, and even in the military. It makes it just almost impossible to work productively there because, yeah, and you know, when you talk about corruption, I mean, the individual officers down there, it's not that they necessarily got into law enforcement because they wanted to work for the cartels, but, you know, they have no choice. I mean, it's the thousands of police have been killed there, many of them just for doing their job. So, you know, it's understandable why corruption is so high. There's certainly nothing we can do to protect them. There's no way to protect themselves from the cartels, and it's a pretty impossible situation.
Mm-hmm. And we just did a story recently also of a Border Patrol agent here on this side backing his truck up to the border near Yuma and had 745 pounds of marijuana in the truck. How much does the corruption extend into American law enforcement and the DEA?
Well, you know, honestly, I didn't see any of that personally, though. Yeah, I mean, there are certainly cases like the one you just mentioned. The current policy just invites corruption everywhere, and it's certainly more prevalent in Mexico because of the level of violence and the salaries paid to law enforcement are so much lower. But it's an incredible amount of money, and it has the potential to corrupt law enforcement everywhere. And, you know, there are certainly those cases every week among U.S. Agencies that does come out.
Mm-hmm. From the perspective of the goal, and again, we're speaking with Sean Dunnigan, a former intelligence agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. And when it comes to this goal of legalizing drugs and coming out of a prohibition-based society, we still have a bureaucracy in the Drug Enforcement Administration with over 10,000 employees and a $2.6 billion budget. How do we change that bureaucracy, and what role will the DEA hold in this new era after prohibition?
You know, that's hard to say. I mean, I would say that the agency did not exist before 1973. So yeah, I think we get in the mindset that because a policy is in place that it's always been that way, or because an infrastructure has been in place that's always been that way, and it hasn't. You know, it could be decreated just as easily as it was created. You know, in terms of what happens, you know, I would like to think that there are plenty of other crimes being committed, all kinds of you know, white collar crimes and violent crimes that the agents and officers that are involved in drug law enforcement right now could be put to better use doing that. I think it's one of the good arguments that LEAP certainly tries to make, is that so many police resources, which are inherently limited, are just wasted fighting the drug war, that really all those resources being redirected could have a positive impact on actual public safety.
Yeah, and so the drug war in the way that we're waging it here, just not, and of course this year, 1961, we're on the 50-year anniversary of these UN treaties that have taken the U.S. prohibitionary approach and expressed it worldwide. So, you know, multiply what we're seeing in America and Mexico times, you know, the rest of the world, and, you know, how much crime is going unsolved because of the time we focus on the drug war, and compared to, and of course, how much crime is created from the prohibition itself. It will be interesting to see how we change in those times. I wanted to go to a story here that was in your bio, and you mentioned about a 1995 murder regarding crack cocaine and how that shaped your experience. Like, tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, that was one of the first cases I came across in Miami, and it was a young boy who was killed while riding in the car with his mother, actually sitting on his mother's lap as they were pulling into their apartment complex, a public apartment complex there in Miami. And they were just pulling in, and over the dispute of the right to sell a small amount of crack in a very small area, his mother was killed, and he was shot and killed with an AK-47, as was the driver, who was the target. You know, it's just an example of, you know, how much the prohibitionist model really breeds that kind of violence.
Mm-hmm. And another interesting part of your bio is just noticing your degrees in philosophy and religion. And I always like to look at the religious aspects of the drug war. I think of it as a religion. It's something that we kind of believe in now on faith. We continue to prosecute this prohibition despite all rational evidence that it's not working and, in fact, making the case worse. Do you see it that way? And if so, how do we begin to change people's minds about this?
You know, I think, I guess the first thing I would say is that people's minds are changing. Polling consistently shows that people are more receptive to a policy change. More and more people are looking at alternatives and are amenable to legalization. And I think some polls now showing with regard to marijuana specifically, majority of people actually in support of that position. So, you know, I mean, I think it is changing. And I think it's changing pretty quickly, as we're seeing some of the state-level legislation that's getting through. But you're right. You know, it's a tenet of faith, and we have a whole generation that was raised on just say no. And it's going to be difficult in a lot of cases, I think, to change that mindset.
We're speaking again with Sean Dunnigan from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a former DEA intelligence agent. And you're also a father of four children. And when we do our polling at Normal and we ask about marijuana legalization, we see a little saddle, you know, when young people support legalization. And then in those childbearing and child-rearing years, it dips. And then by retirement age and when the kids have flown the nest, the support goes back up again. So as a father, as a parent, people, you know, people with kids are very afraid of the legalization model and afraid it'll mean more access for their kids and things will get worse, not better. How do you respond?
Well, you know, that's true. I mean, the polling does kind of break that way. You know, I don't support drug use. I don't encourage it, and I certainly wouldn't want my children to engage in it. But the fact of the matter is, you know, marijuana use is going up and cigarette use is going down. I mean, about half as many people smoke cigarettes now as did 30 years ago, and a lot more people smoke marijuana than did 10 or 15 years ago. So, you know, the idea that the prohibitionist model is keeping anybody from, particularly children, from using any drug, it's not sound. I mean, there's no evidence to support that. And in the most recent Monitoring the Future study, which is a survey of, I think, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders, you know, there are more 12th graders that smoke marijuana than smoke cigarettes. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say that prohibition has been effective in reducing use.
Yeah, especially remarkable statistic when you realize the nicotine in tobacco is very addictive and reinforcing, where the cannabis is not so much. So we've even managed to take a very addictive drug and keep it legal, not arrest anyone, educate people, and bring the rates down. So a very good point to be made there. I'm wondering also, you know, in speaking about your experience with the DEA, we see these stories of raids, and they're happening now from the Obama administration just recently in Detroit, before that Montana, Nevada, California, of course, has had many of these raids. And I don't know how much of your experience would overlap with what was going on in those situations. But what is the atmosphere amongst the DEA in doing this job? Do they feel, I mean, among the rank and file, do they feel we have to do it, it's our job, but, you know, these are patients we wish we weren't? Or do they relish doing this? Because I get reports sometimes where the people say, yeah, it seems like these agents are very gung-ho about it and they're big boys with their toys wanting to hurt people. And I just wanted to get your feelings on that.
You know, it's really hard to generalize. I mean, I think that there are, you know, certainly in some respects it can be paramilitary at times. And, you know, I think that there are certain people who may be in that line of work or involved in those sorts of enforcement activities that do enjoy it, you know, that enjoy it the way a small percentage of people enjoy war. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that the LEAP is growing so quickly and that we have thousands and thousands of members and are gaining new members and new speakers virtually every week, well, certainly new members every week, and we've added several new speakers recently, you know, to me kind of indicates that there's a sizable percentage that don't believe in that, you know, and realize that that's not an effective way to address the drug issue in our country. It's hard to say. You know, I think that those reactions probably run the gamut. My sense is that younger agents, you know, it's exciting and probably enjoy that kind of thing. And once somebody's been around for a while, they realize, are more likely to realize the futility of that.
All right. One final question for Sean Dunnigan here from LEAP, and that is, do you feel that the drug war has created a rift between law enforcement and the citizens they're supposed to protect and serve, and will legalization help to heal that rift?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the whole, you know, the whole, in many communities, particularly minority communities and poorer communities, I mean, how they perceive law enforcement is entirely defined by drug law enforcement. You know, and you see outside of these trials sometimes people wearing the infamous no snitch hats and shirts and that kind of thing. You know, nobody wouldn't want to snitch on a murderer or a rapist or something like that. It's all geared toward drug law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's changed that perception dramatically. Certainly, you know, if you look back before, maybe not before drug laws were enforced, but before they were enforced so violently in a lot of cases, I think people's perception of police and respect for the police was a lot higher, and probably deservedly so.
We'll have to leave it on that. That's an excellent comment to go out on. Sean Dunnigan, former senior intelligence research specialist. I want to make sure I get that right. Senior intelligence research specialist with the DEA, living in Washington, D.C., and speaking out with law enforcement against prohibition. Check out the website at copsaylegalizeddrugs.com, or you can go real short and go with leap.cc. Sean Dunnigan, thank you so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live.
Joel, oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Do you really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join NORML today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say.
Free the marijuana.
Give me, hear me, hear me, say.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say.
Free the marijuana.
Eyes are tight, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to NORML at NORML.org and support NORML Show Live.
Going to light.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant. All right, welcome back. When we did the news headlines at the beginning of the hour, I told you about Arizona's new medical marijuana law going online. And in reporting on this, of course, I read lots of different newspapers out there, lots of different online sources. And today, when the program went online, it went on literally just online. It's the only one that runs completely online. You can't walk in, you can't bring in paper, you can't mail stuff, you can't fax, no phone calls. literally all digital, right? That's a major milestone in medical marijuana. It's the only state that does it that way. That's a significant story. So the Associated Press, when they were covering this, this was a reporter, Amanda Lee Myers. She reported it in the lead paragraph and the follow-up. Lead, by the way, that's the opening paragraph, tells you all the who, what, where, when, how, all that stuff, right? The lead and the follow-up. Here's the Associated Press report. Arizonans to begin applying for medical marijuana today. Arizona's medical marijuana program is hitting a milestone Thursday as patients start turning in applications for the drug to help treat cancer and other diseases in what officials believe is the only completely electronic application system in the country. Since the application for a medical marijuana card is electronic, anyone hoping to apply in person or by phone with the Arizona Department of Health Services will be turned away. And if there are any kinks in the online system, they also will need to report the problem online. All right, so what did you get from that story there, right? Treating cancer and diseases, only online system, right? The major points of those two paragraphs, right? Now, there's a shorter version from the AP that's going around other news outlets. This was from the San Jose Mercury News. Arizonans to begin applying for medical marijuana. Medical marijuana is online in Arizona. Beginning Thursday morning, patients can begin applying to get the drug to help treat cancer and other diseases. All right, there you go. Same basic info, right? Treat cancer and other diseases, and it's an online system. Got it. But for the Arizona Republic, however, the lead of the story isn't about the opening of the country's first e-medical marijuana state program. This piece by Mary Kay Reinhart warns of the impending hordes of pot zombies roaming the streets of Phoenix in search of strains! Strains! Here's the story. Arizona's medical marijuana law takes effect. Health officials are concerned about certification mills. Arizona Republic. Arizona's medical marijuana law takes effect today, but patients already have been lining up to pay hundreds of dollars in some cases for pot recommendations from clinics that opened in recent weeks just for that purpose. Health officials are concerned that so-called certification mills could quickly turn a medical program into a recreational one, but they have limited recourse. All right, so this pot zombie thing, this is an inside joke on the show. The pot zombie thing is a shorthand reference that I use to just, it explains a frame that the prohibitionists use about medical marijuana, that, you know, it's somehow rife with abuse. That, you know, there's tens of thousands of people on these programs. Oh my God, you only said there'd be 500 patients. Oh, there's so many patients. I mean, you hear it when they got their complaints of, oh, only 3% have cancer or AIDS. Or they'll say, oh, look at all the young men coming in and out of the dispensaries, right? And, oh, and of course you hear it when they use the word pot, right? They'll use the word pot. Check those excerpts that it's on the blog at stash.normal.org. First two paragraphs of the AP stories, you'll find the word drug, you'll find the word marijuana, but you will not find the word pot. But in the Arizona Republic story, it's pot recommendations, right? Right there in the lead. Interesting, huh? Now, as far as this notion that we've got this out of control, crazy medical marijuana system and so many people are registering for it, we've got to flip this frame. The pot zombies frame is basically this idea that a few medical people get in, but then all the stoners are going to, and they're going to get into the program, right? So let's flip the frame on them. Here's how you do it. Think for a moment that we're not talking about cannabis. We're not talking about pot, ganja, Mary Jane, marijuana, whatever. Let's suppose AstraZeneca comes out with a new pill, and let's call it Curzatol. Now, Curzatol treats symptoms of nausea, pain, spasticity, seizures, glaucoma, wasting, anxiety, depression, loss of libido, inflammation, digestion, lesions, cancers, infections, and more. Curzatol's common side effects are red eyes, dry mouth, and euphoria. And Curzatol's worst side effects are anxiety or panic, paranoia, and a racing heart. Curzatol is non-habit-forming with low risk of dependence and absolutely non-toxic. Best of all, AstraZeneca sells Curzatol in pill form for a very reasonable price, or they'll sell you a home Curzatol kit and you can manufacture your own Curzatol at home for pennies on the dollar. Would Curzatol not become the most popular and best-selling prescription on the planet? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't doctors get flooded with requests from patients for a prescription for Curzatol? So why is it shocking to us when a medical marijuana state provides a legal way for patients to use cannabis and that state's registry grows into the tens of thousands? If this were anything but medical marijuana, we would be proclaiming it a miracle drug. We would be hailing it from the tops of the trees. We would be screaming it across the headlines. Miracle drug legalized in this country. Miracle drug discovered. New pill treats all these things. Has such low risk of side effects. But no, 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 because it was in a Cheech and Chong movie. Yeah, we can't treat it seriously. Now, the other thing, too, is that this pot zombies frame, part of it depends on the demonization of us, of the non-medical cannabis consumers. And it's also part of this medicine of last resort thinking, you know, because pot is so dangerous and so unpredictable that we got to try all manner of addictive and toxic pharmaceuticals first. And then only if none of them have the desired effect do we dare allow people to try this inconsistent, impure smoked herb. And then only for those suffering the most wretched agony and soon to meet the grim reaper. The way we flip that frame is to portray cannabis as the medicine of first resort. If I suffer from pain, why wouldn't I take safer, non-toxic cannabis instead of an addictive, toxic opiate? If I got insomnia, why wouldn't I want to wind down with some relaxing cannabis and instead of an Ambien that could lead to sleep driving? Sleep driving! If I'm puking from nausea, why wouldn't I inhale cannabis smoke or cannabis vapor instead of trying to swallow and keep down a pill and wait 45 minutes for it to take effect? With so few and so mild side effects and such low risk of dependence and non-toxicity, why wouldn't we be trying cannabis first before we even pop an aspirin? Aspirin kills 7,600 people a year in this country. Now, see, Reinhardt's story back to the Arizona Republic, the whole, you know, scared of the pot zombies, the whole rest of the story only makes a passing reference to the whole online-only application. You know, the real news of this whole Arizona thing, that, my God, they're opening the only online, completely online medical marijuana program. It's a real, literally four words, the online only application. And then she blah, 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 goes on to the rest of her story. And then the rest of her story is all these scare quotes from the DHS director warning about, quote, a handful of physicians writing casual recommendations explode the program. And then she gets a quote from the Arizona Medical Board that says doctors are arriving at the answer before they've even met the patient. And then this guy who runs a chain of brick-and-mortar clinics is complaining about the guys coming in and doing the mobile clinics. They're putting doctors in a hotel room and not even giving you a physical. Well, we got to pivot on that, too. We got to change that frame as well. And the way to reframe that is to pivot this idea of abuse into the idea of compliance. Look, you got large numbers of patients on a registry. That's a sign of a program successfully serving people who are eager to be compliant with the law. Many of these patients are people who have been illegally using cannabis to treat themselves medically for years, and now they're coming above ground. Former clandestine cannabis users are now registering with the state and complying with the law and agreeing to certain limits. And all that money that they were spending in an untaxed and unregulated market is now providing revenue and new jobs through these specialty clinics and a state-run dispensary system. Now, might a purely recreational cannabis user, whatever that is, end up with a medical marijuana card? Yeah, sure, certainly. There is no bureaucratic system that cannot be gamed. It's going to happen. Some pot smoker might get a card. Oh, perish the thought. But look, Arizona's law is not California's law. You can't just walk into a tent and say you got a backache or insomnia and get a card. There's some strict regulations regarding the qualifying conditions, and it's got to be documented in medical records. So this rare exception who games the system is still somebody who's going to the doctor. He's going to see a doctor and lying or whatever he's doing, but getting a recommendation from a doctor. He's still registering with the state. He's still bringing his untaxed, unregulated economic activities above ground and helping to support the rest of the state. And he's agreeing to a 2.5-ounce possession limit that would only be a misdemeanor anyway and probably for a first offense get him probation and drug treatment. So now this guy who was the illegal pot smoker, who's got the card, who's contributed to the state, who's contributing to the economy, me is not going to burden the law enforcement and the court system when you arrest him for the 2 ounces of pot he's carrying around. Everybody wins. That's the way we turn the frames on some of those ideas, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more in our Hour 2 in Toker Talk Radio. We're going to wrap things up here, but coming up on the Normal Network later today, we're going to have a replay of the Viper Hour coming up after Toker Talk Radio. Then 4 o'clock, Normal Show Live, this show replaying. And then 5 o'clock Thursdays, we've got... Viper Hour is at 5 today. Something else is at 3. Cannabis States of America is on at 6 o'clock from Fort Walton Beach, Florida, the podcast for the South. Mondo Radio at 7 o'clock Pacific from Denver, Colorado, the Mile High City. And our West Coast show for tonight, 8 o'clock Pacific, the Hollywood Hemptress Hour with the lovely Terry Joyce. A new episode, brand new episode. Check that out. I'll see what we got coming up here at 3 o'clock will be... Oh, Cannabis Agenda podcast. Replay of Cannabis Agenda coming up at 3. For Ganja John and Coleco the intern, and happy belated birthday to Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.